Australia's number one pop culture convention, Supernova, is returning once again in 2023, starting with Gold Coast at the Gold Coast Convention and Exhibition Centre on April 15th and 16th, as well as at the Melbourne Showgrounds on April 22nd and 23rd. Guests include the likes of Boba Fett himself, Tamora Morrison, Stephen Amell, legendary Disney voice actor Jim Cummings, and so much more. So get your tickets today at supernova.com.au.
Four finger discount, dude.
Welcome to Four Finger Discount, where today we are taking a break from the standard episode review and are instead focusing on the music of The Simpsons and its legacy on pop culture. I am Dando.
I am Guy, and we are joined by someone quite fluent in the world of music. We're very, very fortunate to have this gentleman with us. Dando, would you care to do the introduction to this fine fellow?
Man, he's a man who composes the music for arguably the biggest animated show in the world today. His music puts smiles on faces, and it's reached number one all around the world. He is the composer of Bluey. It's Geoff Bush. Geoff, thanks for your time. How are you doing?
Oh, amazing. What a great intro. Thank you for having me. It's great to meet you.
Now, we were just discussing off-air about, you know, the preparation for the upcoming second album of Blue, which everyone is highly anticipating. It's very, very exciting times in the Bluey landscape, in the Bluey world. How nervous are you? Because the first one, how has the nerves changed, if any, if you are nervous at all, but how's the pressure changed between releasing that first one, which caught everyone off guard of how great it was, and this new one, which everyone wants to be great? And I feel like there's going to be a segment out there just waiting to criticize it and compare it to that first album.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be... it's the first one was everything about... We had everything to prove, because it's like an instrumental album. I know the show was popular, but it wasn't quite as popular as it is now, and it's, you know, there's one song at the end, but the rest of the album is kind of, it's like instrumental music, and it's from the TV show, and sorry, my dog's just having a, oh no, it's not, anyway, she's just having a moan. She's like, get to the point, Geoff. So yeah, that one, the first album was very... We had everything to prove, really. It's like, no, I think we can make something great. We won't just take the music from the show and put it out. We'll re-record it and get string sections and horn sections and do this wild thing. And now that one amazingly did beyond our expectations, so this one's really don't stuff it up is a message. So it's a different mindset, and we really had to, when we were recording it, really had to just try and get out of that. But I think, like you said, second album syndrome. So hopefully, I think I'm really proud of it, but I hope it's, I still hope it's got that, you can hear the sense of fun that we still had making it. But, you know, we'll see. I hope you like it. Ooh. I don't know. I'm really bad at promo. I'll just be like, if you want to listen to it, I don't know.
Pretty well.
It might be good.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, Geoff, I've got to say, and this is going to be that wonderful thing that's more of a statement than a question, but I mean, I'm a middle-aged curmudgeon with no children. I thought, well, okay, I'll listen to Geoff's album just once to sort of, you know, get up to speed about the whole thing's blue. It's been on rotation for the last couple
amazing.
Of days. It is utterly, utterly enchanting.
Thank you so much.
I'm a big Wes Anderson guy, and I get the feeling that if Wes Anderson made a kids movie, this would be the soundtrack to that.
That's pretty good. I love Wes Anderson too, and the soundtracks too. So that's a massive compliment. And you know, it's also just not just me. I have an amazing team of people I write with, and a lot of people collaborated on that album. It's you know, it's a special show too. So I get to have a lot of fun with that and explore different genres and things like that in it. So, I hope it's... I'm stoked you liked it. Really stoked.
Well, I've got two small kids, and I just wanted to thank you for this album, because A, it's one of my favorite albums, one of my favorite vinyls that I actually own. I listen to it whenever I want some cheering up or just an escape from the stresses of life, just myself personally. But it's also helped create many memories with my kids that I don't think would have been made had this music not existed. So thank you for creating it.
Oh, amazing. That's so sweet. We did the first half of it, of the album, the first side. And I'm so glad you got the vinyl, because we mix it all on, like, a lot of it's recorded on old 70s gear. And it's very, like, we almost only think of the vinyl version when we do it, and then we go, oh, we better release it on the platform that most people listen to as well, and so we do all this other mixing later. But hopefully it has that feel like it's a classic album or something. That was what we were going for. What were we talking about? Oh yeah, the first half of it was, we intentionally made some of those songs a bit longer than they probably needed to be, so it feels like it's you can play the games associated with it.
Yeah.
So the first half was games and the second half was like stories, quote unquote. But the first half had some of those
Keep You Up,
yeah, exactly. Mm. I think like,
which personally is one of my favorite pieces of music that I think I've ever heard in my life.
Amazing.
I love Keep You Uppy.
That one's such I love that one because it's reminds me of, you know, it was one of the early episodes we did before it was released or anything, and we just wanted it to feel like this big anthem. In the episode, the kids are playing a game of Keep You Uppy where they try and keep a balloon in the air, and eventually the neighbors sort of join in, but I wanted to make it feel like the entire world was playing Keep You Uppy with them. So we wanted this big anthemic thing. And that's why it's special for me, because I had learnt so much in that process, because I'd written this track and I got into the recording session and I didn't have much time to organize all the proper parts for the horn players. I thought, oh, it's easy enough, they'll just be able to work it out. And they weren't picking it up right away, so we just went, oh, it's not catchy enough. And so the melody you hear now is actually just something we rewrote on the spot. It was just like, okay, here we go, like I'd play something back until the band actually got it like immediately, and if it's sticks in their short-term memory, it's more likely to stick in their everyone else's long-term memory. So we didn't use any music for that session, and a lot of it was just kind of came out of just having fun and getting everyone to play along, which is very unusual.
It sort of leads into something I wanted to ask you, Geoff. I mean, I guess this may sound a bit highfalutin or kind of wanky, but I mean, I guess the guiding principles or some kind of mission statement behind making the music a Bluey. Of course, it's got to, you know, relate to specific scenes or the themes of a specific episode. But I mean, the feeling I got just listening to the whole album, you know, the things that sort of kept sparking for me were like a sense of awakening, like awakening of possibilities of life, sense of discovery, and a sense of joy more than anything else. Even in the more sort of low key music, it just felt like these were the, I don't know, this was what it was sort of sparking in me when I was listening to it. And I'm wondering if there's any sort of, if there are words written on the walls like, remember to be joyful or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a sort of like, yeah, there is a bit of that. I mean, a lot of it's just keeping a great vibe in the studio, really. And but the show is so much about imaginative play. And even when I'm working with the creator, Joe Brum, or any of the other team, or the other composers I work with as well. I was talking to Joe Brum just yesterday about this, and how we would all just be jamming on the piano and trying things and keeping that sense of play and fun while creating it as much as possible as well. And I hope that sort of shines through. If anything, I hope that sense of it shines through. And a lot of that's because when we're, we're talking about sounding wanky here, but like highfalutin, we've got the what's called musical dramaturgy, how music tells a story. A lot of the approach we have in creating these Bluey scores is taking the perspective of the kids, and so how they view the game, like what's in their head. So when we were talking about Keepy Uppy, there is in their head, like objectively, they're having a fun game, but in their head, it's like the whole world is playing Keepy Uppy with them, even though it's only two other characters. So we take that perspective, and so hopefully that's maybe how it sort of shines through, is that joy, that wonder, and excitement about the world that through a kid's eyes. Hopefully the music can help encapsulate that and bring us into their perspective a bit. That was highfalutin, sorry.
No, it was great. No, but is that a tough mindset for a grown man like yourself to recapture? I mean,
not me. I'm not with my brain. Yeah.
With Keepy Uppy, I think Keepy Uppy is a good representation of just the power of Bluey, because it takes games that, you know, we've played that our entire lives, keeping the balloon from touching the floor, right?
Mm.
But it's almost like Bluey has claimed it now, and that game will forever just be now known as Keepy Uppy.
Yeah, isn't that true? I mean, good on you, Joe Brub, creator and writer, with that, you know. We should just claim every, yeah, Duck Duck Goose is now, yeah, it's now Bluey's. You know, we should just claim every game as a Bluey game.
Trademark that shit.
And yeah, all my kids, all they say now is, for real life?
Oh, do they really?
And see, things like, they were shown Bluey at kinder and daycare before I'd actually watched it myself. And they kept saying, for real life? And I was like, what are you talking about? And then I watched Bluey and I was like, ah, now I say it.
I see where you got that from. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've heard a lot of that too, you know, particularly in the US where, you know, kids have been saying Dunny and things like that, which is great. It's finally, we get so much influence by American shows, so it's good we're getting back. But and of course, Simpsons.
Mm.
That's one show I'm very happy to be influenced by.
Yeah, so we're very similar age. I think you're only a couple of years older than me. What are your earliest memories of The Simpsons, like your favourite memories of The Simpsons? Because for me, it's like, you know, 6 p.m. weeknight, Channel 10, watching that every night, that kind of thing. So I feel like we're going to be very similar. What are your favourite memories as a kid watching The Simpsons?
Exactly that. Exactly that. And then, of course, like quoting everything at school. And then to the point where I think a lot of people our age, or around, you know, give or take 10 years, I guess, is we get this sense of...
it's like a sacred language.
It is. It's and I sometimes say, quote, Simpsons, and I forget that it's from an episode completely, because it's such part of the lexicon.
Yeah. It's funny how you said you quote it in the schoolyard. It's crazy to think that now with Bluey, right, kids are like quoting it in the kinder yard. The Simpsons for us at primary school is like how Bluey is for like kinder and like primary school now. Like Bluey is not... maybe it's, would you say, God, do you think it's on the level of what The Simpsons were? Like, it's getting close. Like, it's not quite Bartmania, but it's out there.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you're getting think pieces or praise pieces in the New York Times or whatever, or I mean, there are podcasts I listen to that talk about TV, you know, and these are podcasts from around the world. They'll be, you know, dropping the name Bluey just left and right and sort of saying,
wow,
yeah, I initially put it on to sort of, you know, appease the kids, and now I can't stop watching. You know, so
that's amazing. Yeah,
I mean, it really has just infiltrated on so many levels. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, particularly very recently, this past few months, for some reason, it's just really taken off in the US.
Yeah, with the Macy's Day Parade and things. And...
Yeah. I don't know why. It's just something that's it's great. I love it. I mean, I'd watch it if I didn't watch it 200 times a day anyway, but it's like sometimes I forget how great it is because we deliver one episode a week, so we get really stuck in that zone immediately. So sometimes it's really hard to think back and go, how do we do that? Or even like when I'm working with people, I'm like, who wrote that bit of music there, or who played that? And so it's wild now that we're like, we're between Bluey projects and doing this album thing and talking about it a lot. I'm going, what did we even do there? There was obviously a 5-hour discussion or something about why we should have this music here. And I can't, you know, but maybe that's good. It's like digging it up and then also coming out of that bubble and seeing how loved it is has been amazing. But I think you're right. Like it's... the language of Bluey seeping through, but probably for younger kids, I think, more than... I think The Simpsons, you know, it was particularly like high school.
Yeah.
It was something we could keep quoting for, in high school and stuff like that as well.
How's the process changed with the second album? Because have you had more time to work on this one than the first one? How long did you work on the first one?
Ooh,
and
then
the second one here, have you? How much pressure are you under now with this second one?
It was probably a bit tighter for the second one, actually, the time-wise, because we'd finished work on a bunch of episodes, a batch of episodes, might be some more from season 3 or something. I can't remember. Anyway, but there was like, oh, we've got to finish this by this date, whatever, sometime in November or whatever. And we go, well, we've blocked that out and we're going to do nothing but that album. And then we actually did way too much music, like, we to fit on an album. So we were, the first one was almost like, oh, we've got to actually fill this amount of time and make it all great. And this one is like, oh, we've actually got too many tracks. We had to cut back and then, you know, edit a lot. And it's actually a pretty wild album. It goes from it's, you know, there's a lot of this dance music, and then there's like episodes like Rain, all these chilled music stuff. And yeah, it's a bit all over the place. But it's good. I've got an internal story for it, but I promise it's good, everyone. I promise it's good.
Is it a similar format to the first one with all the sort of, yeah, the dance songs at the start?
Yes. Like more, yep. Yeah, so 100%. It's similar format. Okay. Yeah, 100% similar format where you've got the games and the side A and the stories on side B, essentially, yep. Sort of like that. But yeah. But I'm really happy with it. But there's also a few tracks I'm going to hell for. There's like, it's like, there's a track called the Lollipop. It's like Lollipop song that was in a little episode. I think it was Bingo's favorite song, and it mm-hmm. was purposely written in the episode to be an annoying song. So, and then everyone was like, oh, my kid really wants that. Everyone's okay. requesting it. And so I produced it into this, hopefully slightly less annoying song, and we kept it short on purpose. I really like it anyway, not ironically, but it's definitely like its origins was to be an annoying song, so I might get some hate mail from parents, but we'll see.
How do you know when you've nailed that, when you've nailed like an annoying song?
Yeah, you just know. You just know, yeah. Man.
Well, I know the second one, Dance Mode's got the regular release, plus it's got the Record Store Day one. So I've got the first one here, which is the Record Store Day one.
Oh, you got one. Go. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I managed to get it from JB Hi-Fi of all places. They just randomly had it, and I was like, thank you very much.
Really? They only printed 500 of those. So.
Exactly right. And it was just sitting on the shelf of JB, and I sort of looked at it, and I went, something's not right here. Why is this just sitting here? And I managed to pick that up as well. So I play the blue vinyl and keep that one as a collector's edition. So I'm hoping to get the next one, because the next Record Store Day one looks amazing. It like plays it.
Yeah. In fact, 5 minutes before I came on, I just got the demo, the tester one sent to me from the label. It's amazing. I might get up and show you what a tick. It looks amazing. It's a limited run again. I'm trying to convince them to print more. But you know, if you intend to buy the vinyl, it's probably really worth getting that collector's one, I think, because it's just a cool, it's one that looks really cool. It as it spins, the characters dance. It's like when you see it on the it's like a
little hologram thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a little hologram trick of the eye.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. I think that the Bluey releases are like the hottest thing on Record Store Danny, which is just incredible.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that was amazing. Last time it was like, you know, I'm pretty sure people probably want this Record Store Day version. Are you sure 500's enough? And I was like, yeah, of course.
That's why they want it.
That's why. You can't do more than that. Because if they sit on the shelf, then we're stuff. But it was really great that it did so well. So, but yeah, I've actually got some misprint ones sent to me, which say Albion.
Oh, cool. And flog those on eBay.
Yeah, I was just thinking. It's like, oh, maybe I could... That'd be a good collector's one. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I might have to do something with them. I don't know. Anyway.
Guy, you look like you're going to ask something then, Guy. What were you going to ask?
No, I was just going to point out, it was a lovely bit of synchronicity. You're talking about characters moving, because you couldn't see this, Joff, and people listening to this podcast and not seeing anything would have seen that your greyhound got up from one side of the couch and very gracefully walked to the other side and then just laid down and had a nap. It was just beautiful, beautiful timing.
Amazing.
Having said that, I'd like to steer this sort of in a Simpsons-esque direction for a moment. Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about music, but we're also talking about songs, but primarily, I mean... Yeah, I think you can talk about music in The Simpsons without talking about Danny Elfman's theme tune. Now, as a musically savvy gentleman like yourself, I mean, the first time you heard that, I'm wondering how you felt about it, because I'm not musically minded at all, but I hear it and go, this is perfect for the this is perfect for the Simpsons. It's perfect for Springfield. It sets up the manic nature of the town and the manic nature of the people in it.
Yeah.
And then I start, you know, trying to wrap my head around, how do you create something like that? I mean, it's like, did someone who's musically minded like you go, let's break this down. How did Danny Elfman do this?
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I'm a big fan of Danny Elfman. And also Alf Clausen, who does the general scoring, but not on the film, movie. I don't know why.
And he doesn't do the show anymore either. It's been handed over to Bleeding Fingers Music, which was a tragedy, but anyway.
That was a tragedy. I think, like, particularly on those early seasons, what they did and what Alf Clausen and his team made, and it's amazing. And it was one of the few shows that had sorry, I don't know if you can hear that. There's we're actually getting some curtains installed in the next room.
Oh, okay.
And the door is not as soundproof as I thought. I don't know if you could hear that. Is that coming through?
Oh, not really. It's all good. Oh,
okay. Sorry. I didn't realize that was so loud. Oh, here we go. I think we've got a guy. We're talking about Alf Clausen. So, yeah. It was one of the few shows that I still had like a 30-piece live orchestra recording every week. And yeah, it was a real shame when they dropped that. But back to the theme, I should say, like, one of the things I love about it, it reminds me of, did Danny Elfman do The Burbs? I think he did.
Are we all frantically Googling?
Oh, what is it? Jerry Goldsmith.
That's Gremlins, right?
Yeah, and Total Recall and a whole bunch of other good stuff.
Yes. No, The Burbs was Jerry Goldsmith. Ignore that. It's not any other. So anyway, there was something about... Maybe it wasn't The Burbs. It was a different soundtrack.
We reviewed Pee-wee's Big Adventure on the show.
Oh, did you? Maybe that's what I was thinking of. Sorry. Yes. Yeah.
That's where I sort of feel there are similarities to. It's like, yes. You know, a circus gone a bit mad.
yeah, which is very Oingo Boingo, isn't it? Yeah. Well, the thing with that, he's got that suburban sort of sound. If I get really nerdy, it's called Lydian dominant scale. You're going to have to cut that out because that's the nerdiest thing ever. But basically, if you're on a piano and you play F, 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 and you play any of the white notes, it'll have sound like American suburban music from the 80s, like when the bike going through. So like, I'll give you an example, actually. Let's see if we can actually hear this.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
And while we do that, I'm just going to throw another name into the mix that maybe will... Beetlejuice. Maybe we can Beetlejuice.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. So, I mean, like, we've got this. So I'm just playing an F, and this is the scale, the mode, which is like... sort of thing. So if you just play F like this, you know, you get that Simpsons tonality, yeah. Just like, and so it's based on that, like this whole idea of this sort of the music from that we so associate with like suburbia and, you know, the nuclear family, particularly in the 80s. And then so when you got that, What Danny Elfman's done is taken that into that sort of almost circusy sort of way of his very, you can even hear the scale in The Simpsons. So we've got the, oh, yeah, you've got, so you know the bit at the end of the theme where you get the na 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 na, which is like the,
da 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 da,
yeah, that's that big part of the scale. It's really part of it. You get that. You know, that's the thing that's different to a normal major scale. And that's, he's really like hammers home those notes that are really unique to that sound that are a little bit off too. So that's like the nerdiest like take on it. But I love the theme. I think it's fantastic. And I actually did a workshop with Alf Clausen like in 2013. And
oh my God,
everyone asked him, it's like, how did you write the Simpsons theme? He must get it all the time. Oh, yeah. The poor guy. So,
well, I won't ask you how you wrote the Bluey thing, because I'm pretty sure I've already read about how, you know, Joe came to you with the idea. We're playing the statue game. And But was it a long process? Well, because you said there, that was the vibe that Danny was going for with the Simpsons. Well, what was the vibe you wanted to capture with the Bluey theme?
I think we did, you know, we were talking a lot. It was really hard to remember because it was such a, no one would have thought it would be well known, like unlike The Simpsons, which, you know, they commissioned a proper orchestra and everything to do a theme. And you know what, like, you know, they had a, they recorded everything. It was a, that's a big budget theme. And Bluey wasn't when we first did it. It was, you know, the first season was, oh, it's a new kids show from Australia. See, you know, it's not like we go, here's, you know.
Oh, it's not the Wiggles. We don't care.
Yeah.
Here's unlimited capital.
Yeah. It wasn't like that. And you know, The Simpsons obviously had all those, it was tested already. So it was going to be sort of popular. And they had a budget from the start to get a big orchestra to play that theme and commission Danny Elfman or all that sort of things. But yeah, this one, it's really hard to remember what we actually did, but I remember we did about I think this was the eighth version of the Bluey theme, and it was probably one of the first ones after we had sort of come up with the idea. Well, after Joe Brum said it's about musical statues and imaginative play, and so you know, it's a pretty, I mean, props to them for going with it, because if you think about it objectively, it's a pretty weird theme compared to most TV show themes. And particularly props to Joe Brum for approving and going with it, because it was really like, there's these 5/4 bars in the middle, it features a melodica, there's no actual drums in it, you know, it's a lot of things that are not, and they're dancing, and there's no drums, you know, it's just like this. If you look, put it on paper, if I gave it, wrote it out on paper and said it's going to have these things and everyone would just go, what are you doing? No. Yeah, but it seemed to yes, but the, you know, they approved it, and once we worked, once I played it back, and yeah, I could
now
get into all the math
weddings
about it. But does it really?
Yeah, we have some of our patrons say that they're walking down the aisle, or once they've said their vows, they're walking out to the Bluey thing, or actually, they're walking out to Keepy Uppy. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I've got to see this. I did not know that. Is that are you serious?
Legit. Yeah. Keepy Uppy is just one of those things that just, like you said, it captures just. United.
It's cheer.
You
know? Yeah. It's cheerful and it's optimistic.
Yeah.
It really is.
I had no idea. That's made my day. Thanks for telling me that.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But,
yeah,
but with the Simpsons music.
Yeah.
What stands out to you? Because when people think of Simpsons music, they think of the songs, but there's also the score as well. And there's a great video on YouTube. Some fan has put together all the different sort of like transition sound bites of the episodes.
Yeah.
And you listen to that and you think, it's only like 5 seconds of music, but it's so ingrained in your mind as a kid for watching those episodes.
Yes.
It's just, this is like my childhood, this music. But like, what are your favorite songs from The Simpsons?
My favorite songs, I've got a lot of favorite songs, you know, Songs in the Key of Springfield, that whole album's amazing.
Yeah.
Actually, like, I remember how influential that was to me as a kid, and I hadn't really listened to it for a long time, and I just played it on the way, like, to chat to you guys. I was like, oh, I better catch up, make sure I'm not, you know, talking out my ass too much. And I was, like, playing it back, and I was going, wow, this is some... There's a lot of dialogue on this album.
Yeah.
I forgot how much of dialogue it was, which I think was a bit of a mistake. But my first thing I think of is like the Planet of the Apes musical. I don't know why that just makes me laugh every time.
See, as a kid, I don't think I appreciated it as much as I do as an adult, that one.
Yeah, yeah. You know what my favorite bit is? That can you play the piano anymore? Of course you can, but you couldn't before. And he plays that like run on a piano, and it's just the cheesiest like Broadway sieve. And whatever that like scale is plays, and I don't know, it's just absolutely nailed it. All those musical ones, the Betty Ford musical one, they're all amazing. And I know, you know, Alf Clausen probably didn't do the lyrics for them, but the way he treats them, the lyrics, is amazing. I also, you know, the there's one which I think would have been one of the hardest ones for Alf to do would have been Bagged Me a Homer, because I think the lyrics for that are actually like, they're kind of terrible, like in a way that it's the first minute of a song is like exposition to lead up to I Bagged Me a Homer. And it's just like, it's like you could have just made it really simple, but but sometimes script writers aren't always the best lyric writers. But that's the one where I'm going, oh man, that would have been a tough one to like write music for that keep people engaged?
I reckon, I think that one was actually written, or maybe it was just performed by, but the actress, or what's her name?
Oh, really?
Beverly D'Angelo.
Oh, yeah. I'm like poo-pooing them.
No, but Christmas Vacation. She played a wife in Christmas Vacation. She, and National Lampoon film. She was the voice actress for Lurleen Lumpkin.
Oh, I'm pretty really?
Sure. I know she performed them. I don't know if she wrote them. She may have wrote them. I know Matt Groening, that was the only episode that Matt Groening ever wrote, that one as well.
Really? Well, that's the only song where I'm like, oh, but somehow the music fits in and it makes it work. Because when I hear the song, I'm like, get to the Bag Me a Home. It goes for ages. I shouldn't be complaining about it because it's all amazing. I still love it.
Well, you were talking earlier about how you thought there might have been too much dialogue on Songs in the Key of Springfield, and the follow-up was actually
this
really
is
good
my
as well.
Critique of Songs in the Key of Springfield. I didn't mean to do that.
But the thing is, though, this was at a time, 97 when that came out, the follow-up was 99.
Yeah.
That was at a time when the episodes weren't easily accessible. So owning the episodes 100%. Was a big deal. So I think with the Bluey one, do you think like maybe if the Bluey one had been released in the 90s when we're in a time where you couldn't just go on ABC Kids and watch the episodes whenever you wanted to or YouTube, do you think you might have been inclined to try and incorporate more dialogue as a result of that to sort of say you can take home your favorite episodes or your favorite moments from Bluey as opposed to just the music?
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I hadn't even thought of that because, of course, now you can just look up your favorite bits and whatever you need. And, you know, we've been really careful with the album not to put too much dialogue for that reason because it's like, oh, we had people write to us saying, you know, I can't remember, it was one track maybe in the first one or something which had a lot of dialogue. Not much when I actually think about it, just but they were lines, going, oh, my kid just wants to watch this episode now. And I think like,
it
might be
is it the feather? Is it like the one with the talking about a feather or something? Or is it like goodbye
the weekend?
It's Bingo saying goodbye to it or something.
Maybe, yeah. There was something where it might be that, but I can't remember which one it was. But someone's like, oh, whenever we play this, they just think, oh, I want to. Their kid just wants to go watch the episode. And I thought, oh, well, that's actually good feedback. But and I can so appreciate now that you say that how the album would have been so good back then. Like, why it was so good back then, because you're like, it's just got all the zingers. It's got all the best
moments. Because we'd seen the episode so many times, so when you listen to it, you just visualize it in your head. So it's like owning those moments. Because, you know, you could occasionally they'd release those sets where it was like four episodes they'd handpicked that were crime-related or movie-related or something like that, and they release them that way. But not until the early 2000s did they start releasing the episodes in season mode. So it was impossible to own the episodes up to that point. But, we live in a world of streaming now where everything's accessible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. But it's such an amazing album. And, you know, even when I'm critiquing them, but every track is amazing. Like, even the ones that I'm like, oh, they could have done this or something. When you don't notice, every track is just, I love every track, actually. And
I was a big fan of the alternate takes on the theme. So you had like the gambling episode, Springfield, the Who Shot Mr. Burns 1 and 2 end credits. Usually the end credits, they put a spin on the themes.
Who Shot Mr. Burns?
Part 1 and 2. Yes, yeah, so you have the Afro-Cuban version, and you have like the in part 1, I think it was like the, almost like a, just a crime related, feels like a, I don't know, just like a crime TV show related version of the theme. You had the Hill Street Blues theme, the Australia episode, Bart vs. Australia, the Australian.
Oh, Lisa's
Weddings outro, just all those kind of outros, the end credits. That's what I think what I appreciate the most. And I think just as I get older, I appreciate the music side of the album as opposed to the dialogue side, like you were saying.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. And there was, the music's, it's what Alf did in the show is actually really, really, really hard to do in that it gave it a lot of heart, but also didn't distract from the comedy, but kept it light. Because, I mean, a lot of people, when they're trying to write comedy, they'll be like building up the drama to hit the punchline and things like that, which is another approach, and that's really fun. Or they go, oh, we're going to treat it really seriously, and so you get this sort of parody sort of idea. But I think what Alf did with all these transitions particularly, it kept it light but in a place where you have sort of permission to laugh but you're still in the story. And I particularly think like the Treehouse of Horror episodes, like the music for that, that's some of the trickiest stuff, I think, to do. Yep. And he sort of took this really sort of schlocky approach, almost. But it didn't feel derivative or like... And the, it lets the episode breathe so much as well and make it feel so classy, particularly with these live players. It feels like you're watching some, well, you know, you're watching a classic movie or something sometimes. You know, you've got these, a live orchestra playing these little, these beautiful transitions and some of those amazing players. But, yeah, I mean, when we went to his workshop and everything, I was studying in New York at the time. And he came in to give us a little class on Simpsons music, and it was amazing. It was like, it, most people, like lecturers, come in, they're like in their hoodie and they're like, hey, you know, what we do this, and they're trying to be cool. He's like in a full on suit at a podium, and he's talking like it's like it's like it's, they have this amazing formality to it. He's just going, and of course, the click track sounds like this. And he will play it, and then he goes, from there, what we do is we get the performer to play along to the click track, and it sounds like this. And it was like, what is this? This is amazing. It was like Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra or something. It was just like, and he had seemed to have a really great attitude to the fact that he had, you know, he gets asked about the theme all the time, and it was absolutely charming. It was very refreshing, and I still don't know what he's really like, or if he was half joking about it, or if that's what he's like, or he's a real formal guy or not, or it was perfect, and I really appreciate it. But yeah, it was great. It's a shame he's not on it anymore, but.
Geoff, did you have like an interest in film and TV sort of soundtrack composition when you first started getting interested in music? Because, I mean, it strikes me as being a much more sort of... I mean, music's collaborative by its nature as well, but putting something together for a film or a TV show seems even more collaborative. Yeah. I mean, is it something that you... was it difficult to get into that groove?
My piano teacher was a TV composer called Ken McLean, who sort of, he gave me the bug. So I just thought it was like the coolest job ever, because I'd come in and I was never a prodigy kid. I was never like good at music. I was always just like, and I'm not trying to be false humble here. I'm just not a great natural musician. Yeah, I just loved it and practiced in my lunch break at school and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, Ken, my teacher, when I was like 13, was doing music for some, I can't remember what it was. But anyway, I just thought it was the coolest job ever. And he taught me about jazz and improvising and things like that and composition. And I got really into that. And that opened my mind to the possibilities of like, oh, you could be someone who actually makes music for films. That'd be amazing. And, I always love TV particularly, and I mean, who doesn't? But like I'm obsessed with TV and TV shows, and a lot of my friends while I was studying, I started studying piano at the conservatorium. A lot of my friends were actually from the film school, and I'd go hang out with them rather than the musicians. And then from there, we would be a little team of people, including Daly, who's the executive producer of Bluey. We would be all together making these terrible little films. They were great, but they were terrible, let's be honest. So, you know, what 18-year-olds could piece together. And I think I was probably just one of the few people who, you know, I did a paper run and I'd saved up all my money to buy like a little like box that let me record to film and, you know, these sorts of things. Like, I was probably one of the few people who had the rudimentary versions of that gear and was also willing to do these things for free with people. So this was, you know, and this was mid-2000s-y, so it wasn't like all this stuff was super readily available as it is now. But yeah, I mean, I think I've always been really interested in it, and I've always loved how music can tell stories and the different ways you can do it. And there's so many ways to be right when you're writing music and for film. And yeah, it's just so many possibilities and so many different ways of doing it. So I find that really all fascinating.
Do you think the Bluey style is going to be your style going forward? Or are you looking forward to the chance of potentially something different where you can just sink your teeth into something that's the opposite of Bluey?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because, I mean... I think there's certainly, you know, after doing Bluey, mostly just doing Bluey, and there's a few other things I've done, but mostly just doing Bluey for the past 5 years, is that the style that sort of developed for Bluey has become so much part of what my musical style is.
Yeah.
So maybe I've been typecast. Maybe this is all I can do now. But I do... I'd love to do like a historical drama or something particularly. I think that'd be really fun. And but I mean, the good thing about Bluey is that, I mean, there's certain things we can't really push anything that's too ambiguous with the music in a way, because you want a sense of clarity with the intention of a lot of the music that's in there. And and you can't go too scary, of course, because you know, can't make anything into a nightmare. And we, you know, we have to do it. Well, that low note's pretty going to be like, we don't, you know, that scene there, even though it's scary, we can't actually make it scary. You know, there's some things like that. Those are the only really the two things that are really holding me back, because we get to explore all sorts of different types of telling a story with music in Bluey, which are usually with other shows, you just pick one theme and one stylistic idea or concept with music and storytelling, and you stick to it. But yeah, I mean, that's the fun of Bluey, is we get to do like something that's maybe a bit more that plays a character's perspectives a lot, or maybe we do something that's really like philosophical, like Bike, which is just like the music doesn't necessarily play the character's perspectives that much, and all these different episodes that we can explore different approaches to writing music.
Well, I know you and Joe, when you're writing the music or you're coming up with the music, you watch the episode and you think, how are the kids feeling and thinking at this point in time? But have you ever written a piece of music though and gone, I really like what I've written here, can you write an episode around this?
No, not so much. There's definitely a few that would have been cool, but there's definitely a few things where I will send a piece of classical music particularly or something to Joe. In that, is this something that, you know, I feel like this will work really well on this episode that you're in the middle of writing, or there's a script for that no one started animation or anything like that. And I'll give, you know, and because this tune is blah, 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 and it represents this and or whatever, and I feel like we can bring that out there. And then sometimes he'll just ignore that and then bring it back. He'll write a whole new script based with that in mind, you know, but no, nothing that I've actually written that's original that I'll send to him and he'll write an episode around. Why hasn't he done that? No,
do you feel like subconsciously the music of The Simpsons is probably the show we've all watched growing up in the
yeah.
The show we watched the most more than any. Do you think it's subconsciously influenced your style in any way? Because I know there's a lot of Simpsons references in Bluey from a writing perspective, but from a music perspective.
Yeah, I don't think so in terms of like how the cues work and that approach. There's maybe one or two episodes that we took a bit of the musical dramaturgy approach of The Simpsons with these sort of like particularly those transition things that take you into the mood and then you just have the dialogue, let it speak it for itself. Bluey's often... the music is pretty wall-to-wall. There's a lot of music in it. So we don't usually take that in terms of that approach. But I think in terms of that sound, particularly, you know, I think Simpsons was used a 20 or 30-piece orchestra. So it's not a full orchestra. And it's all live players. And when you're writing for a smaller ensemble, because a normal orchestra is like 80 pieces. When you're writing for a smaller ensemble like that, you get a more... human smaller sound. You hear certain instruments actually feature from the actual player rather than a big ensemble sound, and I think that sort of sound, I love that sound. I like it more than an orchestra sound in most cases too, like a big orchestra sound. And I think that sound probably influenced a lot, like that the textures, that the humanity of the players shining through. That's definitely something that we do a lot in Bluey, is, you know, we feature the musicians we get to have in.
It seems to me, though, right now is the perfect time for a Simpsons Bluey crossover, right?
Even yeah, if it's what's just, going on?
Even if it's just a couch gag of some kind, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How excited would it be for you to write a Bluey-esque version of the Simpsons theme for a couch gag?
It'd be amazing. I wonder if they'd ever. Yeah. Oh wait, that I don't think they'd call me, but I think that would be amazing if they.
If you want to take the internet by storm and just own the internet for the day, a Bluey Simpsons cross couch gag. That's where it's at.
Well, I've got news for you, Nardo.
Every character in the intro is all bluey-eyed or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
It would be perfect. It's just now's the time to do it.
Yeah. Who's in charge of this?
I'll tweet our pals over at The Simpsons today. I'll make it happen.
Yes, please. Yes. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
I'm 100% on board if anyone asks. But I think they'll probably just use like, I don't know who does the music. I saw that Weird Al just had a recent one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did it was himself, that? So it's time for you.
Oh, he did it himself.
He did it himself.
Right. I'm in.
One of the things I loved about the, I'm getting back to the Bluey album, right, was you've mentioned in a previous interview that you wanted this to be the first album that a kid owned, not streamed. And I love that because it's one of those things. I love the fact that one of the first albums I've owned was the Simpsons album.
Oh, and, amazing, yeah.
And this one here is the first vinyl that my son's ever owned, my son Elliot.
That's so special.
And he loves just putting it on. It's like you said, it's like an event, putting the record on and putting the little needle down and stuff like that. And he loves the Bluey. I mean, he always asks us to put it on, but he doesn't want me to play it on my phone. It's got to be the vinyl.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so happy to hear that. That makes my day. Like, there's something, it does make you listen to things differently when it's on vinyl, and it's anything that you have to put any ounce of effort in makes you really appreciate things a bit more, I think. I mean, I love the vinyl thing. I know not everyone can have a vinyl player, or it's not practical and all those sorts of things, but I do love the idea that people get to, you know, actually have this thing they can hold, and it's like, this is my... Yeah, the idea of it being someone's first album. I don't know when the Simpsons album came in my canon of first albums, but I know it was because my first album was E17 Steam.
I think my first album I ever bought, my first single I ever bought was I can't remember what it was. Oh, not Backstreet's Back. I Quit Playing Games With My Heart. That one.
Oh, amazing! Great.
That was my first single.
I don't even know when the Simpsons album arrived. I remember I had there was a few TV shows. It came out in 97. Yeah, no, I would have been what was I? 11 or 12 then. Okay, so yeah, I probably it wouldn't be in a first album for sure, but it was somewhere there. I remember really there was a few I had it with a bunch of other soundtracks there, like the Ren and Stimpy album and things like that.
Yeah.
So,
well, we just recently reviewed on our South Park podcast, Chef Aid.
Oh, remember
when
right.
When the Chef Aid album came out, that was huge in Australia. Like this one here.
Yeah. I've never heard of that one.
Chef Aid, really?
Yeah.
Well, it was number one. Did it really? It got number one in Australia. One. Yeah.
You're kidding. No. Okay, I'm going to check it out.
But are you a scores kind of guy? Like, do you when you buy vinyl, are you buying albums or are you buying music soundtracks and music scores? Like, what's your sort of preference?
A bit of everything. I like, particularly for vinyl, you know, I try to find things that I might not get anywhere else, or it's hard to find on streaming, or just things based on their cover if it's secondhand, you know, like, oh, what's this? This is a Bulgarian choir or something like that. And I was like, and then I get to hear something really novel for me, obviously. I do have a few soundtracks as well. I really enjoy when I listen to music at home, it's always on vinyl because I don't listen to much music at home because I'm in the studio all day. Sometimes I'm just like, I just want to hear someone talk or like, you know what I mean? Okay. Or just, I just need to get away from that headspace or...
So you put on various Bluey podcasts, I'm sure.
yeah, exactly, yeah. because I'm in the studio all day, and it's particularly if I'm mixing music, sometimes if I'm listening to music that I really love, it feels like work and I love it, but if you're doing it for 16 hours or something, if I've been in the studio for 16 hours recording or listening or mixing and stuff, the last thing I want to do is hear something I love and then like compare myself to it or like hear the tweaks or anything like that. So I usually try and listen to things that are a bit more novel to me or something that is I'm excited at because it is different or something I wouldn't have thought of like that. Yeah.
Well, this may be a bit of a big ask given that, Geoff, but I mean, people who are fans of Bluey music, people who are fans of Simpson music, are there three pieces of music, maybe three soundtracks or three songs or three albums that you would recommend to them? It's like, well, if you do the human algorithm, if you like this, you may also like this.
Yeah, that's a real... I
put you on the spot.
So sorry. I should have thought of it. I really can't... I've been asked this similar things before and I've never, ever had a good answer. And it changes so much. There's so much that I get really into a particular day even. I'll be like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever.
Well, it's interesting you say that with the Bluey music, actually, because sometimes I put it on, I'm like, it's making me feel so happy. Maybe I'm just in the right kind of frame of mind, right? But like songs like, look, I keep going back to Keepy Uppy and Fruit Bat. I love Fruit Bat. Did you write Fruit Bat? Because you're not credited on the album with Fruit Bat.
Yeah, Fruit Bat. Well, originally, I worked on that episode with a composer called Pluto Jones.
Yeah.
And that song, I have to say, is mostly his.
Okay.
Stuff. I think what I added was some melodica parts to it. Like,
okay.
And so technically I'm down as like a co-writer for adding those little things and all that stuff. But like the main hook and stuff is just like, it's his, from his brain. That's one of my favorite ones as well. And, he always comes up with such a great little, these great hooks.
Yeah.
And usually when I'm working with someone, I'll play a little piano thing in and they'll send it. You go, oh, do something like this, or this is a vibe, or maybe I'll write something. Sometimes people take that and use it, or they don't. But for this one, it was very much just like completely ignored what I said through and wrote his own thing. And thank goodness he did, because it was so good. And that one's... It's great. I love the bass sound in there too that he got. Yeah.
Well, I described that as, to me, that, and I've tricked my sister into this, right? I listened to it and I was like, you could tell somebody that this is a hidden track on a Sgt. Pepper album, right?
It
has the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band kind of vibe to it, but that era of the Beatles. Mm. And I told my sister, I said, oh, they've just discovered a Beatles song that, you know, they didn't find it until, I didn't tell her how, she didn't pay much attention. She's like, oh, really? Okay, cool, play it. I played it. And she started tearing up, thinking it was an actual Beatles track. That's how good that's how good Fruit Bat is, in my opinion.
I'm gonna pass that through to Pluto. Like, he's gonna be stoked. I know one of the things we talked about for that episode when we were doing that episode, and this was also before Bluey came out, so no one had any idea about any of this.
Yeah.
But we it was a dream sequence, and I didn't want it to be dreamy at all. I wanted it to be like a night out, like at a dive bar. Mm-hmm. And so it was very much like, we talked about White Stripes, we talked about like these sorts of bands that you might see like in a dive bar at like 2 a.m. or something, like, and that's what, and they're having just a really fun time.
Yeah.
And it's sort of messy and bar, like a rock band from a bar. And
it's an arm in arm kind of song, isn't it? Where everyone's just arm in arm singing along.
Na, 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 na. Yeah. And the na na.
It's got a Hey Jude vibe to it.
Yeah, it does actually. Yeah. Yeah. And it's very, So that's, I mean, that was the influence for that track particularly. I would have to ask Pluto more about like where the rest of that, the vibe from, how he came up with that sort of thing. But it was definitely, I think it was the first episode we worked on together.
Wow, okay.
And I was like, well, why don't you have a crack at this dream sequence? And he nailed it. You know, really, you know, we go through a lot of drafts in Blue. We're very particular. And even the first draft was really close. Like, it was pretty amazing. So, on that one. So,
But my point was, straight away from my love for the song, but my point was going to be that, you know, we're two small kids. They go through phases, you know. 1 week it's the Muppets, then it's Paw Patrol, then it's Spidey or whatever. Yeah, and they love listening to the songs on repeat. And I get sick of the songs by the end of the week. Not so much the Muppets, because I love the Muppets. I'm a Muppets kid.
I love the Muppets.
Yes. But Bluey, you just never seem to get sick of the songs. Like Guy was saying, he's had it on rotation. It's just beautiful music.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, we do put a lot of time, a lot of love into the soundtrack stuff. People say it's unnecessary amount of work that goes into it.
But then you put out a number one album, so you kind of go,
and then you go, see, it was fine. But, you know, I mean, I think originally we were probably, you know, everyone was expecting us just to take what was on the TV show and just put it in there.
That's what I thought it was going to be, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think the repeatability of it is because we, you know, there's live players and we spent ages on each track. It's like, we're not quite like, I think, was it Metallica had that some of them, you know, reading auras and stuff? We didn't get there, but we got like, there's definitely some things where we're going, it needs another trumpet.
But it's music that you can't get from watching the show, though. Like you said, you took the music that you had that were in the episodes and you extended them and made them, you know, unique to the album. So if you want to hear the music, you have to buy the album. Where the Simpsons albums were, if you watch the Simpsons, you've probably heard all this music before. It's just music that's appeared on the show. This is music that's you know, has appeared on the show, but this is the full version.
Yeah, and a part of that is because when we're doing in the thick of writing music for the show, we don't have time to be like, let's do everything we wanted to do with it. It's almost like we're trying to correct all the things we wish we had time to do on the show as well. Particularly for the first season, because it was such a tight turnaround and it was, you know, didn't have the same budget and we didn't have as much scope for live players and, you know, we pulling lots of favors and to get it there to when we finally got the albums thing. It's like, no, this is, I love this show. It's a beautiful show. I really want this to be, we really want to do everything we wanted to do. It's in the show, it works fine because there's often dialogue over certain scenes. And so the bits that are underneath everything, you know, it's fine. Like there's space there. You don't want it to, you know, it needs to fit in with the whole picture of what's going on there. But, I'm so stoked. I'm so stoked you don't get sick of it. That's actually huge because, you know, it's one of the things I often worry about with parents having to, if Bluey's playing 200 times a day, I always worry, are they gonna hate me for hearing it every time?
If you've got a room full of kids and you want their attention, if they're just not listening, put the Bluey theme on, within 2 seconds, they all just go and smile. You know? It's like just captivates the room. But guys, is there anything else you want to ask Joff before we send him on his way to go work on some more Bluey music?
I think we'd better let him get back to it, actually.
Sorry for taking so much of your time, Joff.
No, I loved it. That was great. This afternoon, clear it. We're talking about Simpsons music.
one more final Simpsons question then, all right?
Yeah. So,
you know, one of the best things about being a kid in the 90s was Simpsons marathons. Channel 10 came to do them. Super Simpsons weekends. I don't know whether you had Foxtel as a kid, but Saturday, Sunday mornings were just filled with the Simpsons, right? When the Olympics were on, my parents watched the Olympics. I watched the Simpsons marathons that were on Fox 8. You've been given control of a Simpsons marathon. It's 1998. You control Channel 10. You get to pick 5 Simpsons episodes to put a your perfect Joff Bush Simpsons marathon together. Which episodes are going in there?
Oh, that is a tough question. The first one has got to be... I actually can't remember the names of the titles.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm really bad with that. The Bleeding Gums Murphy
episode. Round Springfield, which is one of my favorite parts of the Songs in the Key of Springfield. Just so much joy, isn't it? So it's because, you know, as outrageous as it is that Lisa's talking to a cloud, she's living a moment that we all wish we could with people we've lost in the past.
It's emotional.
It's so uplifting, and her version of Jazzman, it's just fantastic.
Yeah. And not just because it's the music themed episode. I think it's just so sweet. Anyway, yeah. The monorail episode.
Mm-hmm. Monorail. Marge versus the monorail. Round Springfield. Yeah.
Yeah. Stonecutters.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
I'm just going off my favorite tracks.
Yeah.
I've only got 2 left.
What Trios of Horror would sneak its way in there if you had to put one?
A Treehouse of Horror. You definitely need a Treehouse of Horror.
Are you going The Shining?
Which one's the one with the... Or maybe this is not Treehouse of Horror. What's the one that's like the X-Files-y burns?
That's the Springfield Files. That's just an X-Files
Springfield
parody.
Files.
As a sci-fi fan growing up, that was like my favorite.
That one blew me away when it first came out.
Yeah. All right, one more.
Okay. And then... No, I have to choose one.
So you've got Half Out, you've got Half Out, you've got Wacky, you've got the Stonecutters, you've got Sci-Fi with the Springfield Files.
Yeah. This is a tough, tough question. I'm trying to think of what...
Put in Can I Borrow a Feeling? You know you want to.
I'm going to go... Oh, hey, go. I think I'm just going to have to go the one with all the Broadway hits in it. What's it called again?
The Broadway hits. Oh, you mean the when Marge does the Streetcar Named Desire?
No. The one where they go to. Hang on. Which one's the one with Planet of the Apes? And that? Is that the same one?
That's where Troy McClure is dating Selma.
Yes. Yeah, the Selma. David wants dating Selma. That one.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Good dose of Phil Hartman.
What's it called again?
A Fish Called Selma.
You're amazing. A Fish Called Selma.
Yes.
Yes. I'm going to have to go that one just because I quoted that for about, like, I'd sing it and play it on the piano, all of those. Sorry I'm so bad with these names.
Right, well, there you go. So Joff's Springfield, Simpsons Marathon is Round Springfield. We've got the Springfield Files. We've got A Fish Called Selma. What else would we throw in there? Marge versus the Monorail and the Stonecutters episode.
I'm going to lock that in, and then I'm going to message you in like a day and go, what was I thinking? I'm so sorry.
But thank you once again, Joff. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. Lovely to meet you and chat. And thanks for the great questions. I hope there's something useful there.
Oh, there will be. And all the best with the release of Dance Mode. I'm sure it's going to go just as good, if not better, than that.
We'll see. Fingers crossed. I'm sweating. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks,
heaps. Lovely to see you. Thanks. Bye.
What a lovely gentleman Mr. Joff Bush is. Hey, Mr. Davis.
Oh, my gosh. A creative giant and a very, very nice gentleman. We were so pleased to have a bit of time with him this afternoon.
Yes. And Al Jean, Matt Salmon, whoever you're out there listening, Simpsons Universe, Simpsons HQ, Bluey Simpsons crossover. We want it to happen. Joff wants it to happen. I'm sure the creator Joe wants it to happen as well. Everyone wants a Simpsons Bluey crossover. Let's do it. The Bluey Simpsons couch gag. I want it to happen. So let's make it happen.
Indeed. Get cracking on that one.
Yes, that's right, guys. And don't forget also, make sure you pre-order your copy of Dance Mode. It is the second release of the Bluey music. You can also get the Record Store Day version as well that Joff was talking about. I'm going to be trying to get my hands on that one. I got my hands on the first Record Store Day release of Bluey, but maybe not be as lucky with this one. We'll see what happens. But also, please don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you do find this your podcast. And also follow us on social media at Four Finger Pod on Twitter and at Four Finger Discount on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening to our conversation here with Joff Bush from Bluey. It's been an absolute delight to have you guys all on board with us today. But Mr. Davis, any final words for those incredible listeners out there?
For real life?
Shh.